The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Doyle from Thinking Outside the Long Box. Today I have Josh Paez on the line here. He'll be going over our pop culture classic, which was the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, as well as some future projects he's working on. And I looked into it, a class that he teaches with Committed Impulse that looks pretty exciting for actors as well as working professionals. So, Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. How are you?
I'm doing great this morning. I went ahead and thank you off air, but I want to thank you on air as well. Just thanks for taking the time and out of your busy schedule to go ahead and chat with us this morning.
Sure. What do you want to chat about?
Actually, let's get started with your work with Committed Impulse. I was looking into that this morning, and it looked pretty interesting from not only an actor standpoint, but it looked like you had all kind of walks of life going through this program, benefiting from it. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you guys do there?
Sure. I mean, basically, you know, I went to a very, I had very traditional actor training that was very much about kind of going into your past, trying to pull things to kind of connect to a scene and whatever. And I could understand the logic of it, but it wasn't that interesting to me. And I really became really interested in how could I get to a place of spontaneity? Like, how could I make spontaneity almost something like a technique or something that I could easily tap into?
Sure.
And I trained with people from all over the world, very similar to, I guess, Raphael and Splinter, if you want to make that connection. But I trained with people in Japan, people from Poland, and just people that were experimenting with very physically based actor training, all designed to get you out of your head into your body, very connected to your immediate environment, so that you could actually train your nervous system to create in the moment that you were creating. And our mind always wants to make everything safe and repetitive, but that's not very fun to watch.
Sure.
And so that's this journey I've been on for many decades of just how can I get spontaneity and then eventually, not that I plan to, but now I teach other people how to be present, meaning out of their head and connected to, you know, to what's actually in front of them, and how to open the creative channel within people, which is so beneficial for people that are, certainly for anybody that creates, but also for business people that have to either public speak or sell something, you know, just to train them to actually be with whoever it is that they're working with is a very simple, not always easy, but it's a really amazing tool that just opens everything up.
Like a getting out of your own way type of thing, getting rid of your head.
Absolutely. Well, getting out of your mind's way.
Yeah.
Because our mind is always going to tell us some version of how we suck.
Sure.
Like, no matter how successful we are, if we listen to it, it'll come around to start saying that stuff. And one thing that I do in my classes is anytime anybody is aware that they've gone into their head, meaning they've drifted away from what's happening right in front of them, they say out loud, "I'm back." So it just keeps training you to keep coming back, because we have to recognize that there is a part of our brain that wants to pull us into the past or the future.
For sure. I think it's very normal to think that way outside of the class environment you're talking about.
Yeah.
That sounds really interesting, actually. Yeah, I'd watched several of your videos and read through a lot of the people who had gone through the program, so I've been through, I've never been an actor, but, you know, I've been through many like work scheduled programs and stuff like that for business. And so,
yeah, I'll just say there's a free audio on the website if anybody wants to check it out. I think you just click on, it says free class.
Yeah, you do.
My free class. You know, you can check out that audio if anybody
It's very easy to find on the website.
Yeah.
So let's jump into what we called you about here with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I know it's been a long time, but what were your thoughts when you received the script for this movie? Because as I went back and looked, I was not really seeing a whole lot of comic book related movies before its time. I mean, you had all the Mask of Zorro and Lone Ranger stuff going way back, but you didn't really have anything outside of the box like that as far as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles go. I think RoboCop was the only thing similar even. So to me, I just like, I would think if I saw that as an actor, I would be like, I don't think this is a real thing. But evidently you'd had the foresight to not think that way, and it became a very popular movie of that time. But I was just kind of curious your thoughts on first receiving that script, and if you thought it was going to be successful, or if you knew it was going to happen with it, or if you kind of just were along for the ride.
Well, you know, my agent called me and said they have a audition for you, for me, for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I was like I couldn't even hear it. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What is it? And I was like, what is this? And they said, it's to be a turtle. And I was like, what? And they said, just check out the script. And like, they were kind of baffled too.
Yeah.
And I read the script and I was like, this is kind of cool. Like, this is weird and cool. I kind of came up, you know, I grew up in, it was called Alphabet City, you know, when I was growing up in the East Village in New York City, a very dangerous, very vibrant neighborhood. And I kind of had this sense that this character, Raphael, was, I could connect him to people that would walk in the neighborhood trying to be kind of bigger and tougher than they were as a protective device, as, you know, so that nobody would mess with them. And so I just kind of started physicalizing, you know, that way, and then brought that into the audition and, you know, and had a blast doing it. And then there were follow-up auditions, and I had trained in some martial arts. And so, you know, we did some kicks in the air and stuff like that. Sure. And, you know, I met with Steve Barron, and who's the director. And he was like, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be huge. And I was like, well, okay. But I loved it. You know, I was into it. After getting cast, I was flown to London to Jim Henson's Creature Shop. And there, I was body casted from head to toe because they had to make the costume
for
to
sure.
exactly fit my body. And so that was super intense, you know, just being completely sealed up in plaster, like literally from head to toe, except for two straws in my nostrils.
It sounds very claustrophobic to me.
Oh my God. It was insane. It was, and they evidently, they left all of us, all of the four turtles, all the four guys, when they did each of us, they left us in there longer than they needed because they wanted to see if we would freak out or not.
Seems like a smart thing to do, but kind of mischievous for sure.
Yeah.
What was that like being at a Jim Henson studio? Did you guys get a chance to look around there at all, or just like—
Oh yeah. I mean, it was magic. It was just magical. It was just, you know, it was all pre-CGI.
Yeah.
And so everything was, you know, they had like, you know, I remember watching a guy who was like building this wolf, and there were just, you know, hundreds of wires, if not thousands of wires, like just coming out of the wolf's head to make, you know, different hairs move, to make the eyes move, to make, you know, to expose the teeth, like a gnarling look. And these guys were just so committed and passionate and so into what they were doing. And, you know, that in itself was just inspiring, just to see all the things that they were doing.
Yeah, I think they would have to be. I mean, like, we watch a lot of old movies, hence the segment, but a lot of them don't hold up visually very well, but the Turtles actually does. Like, the costumes are freaking amazing, whoever really spent the time going through them. Literally, they hold up a lot better than even some of the CGI characters today. I think we're still getting the process correct.
Yeah, but it's also, there's something about having somebody in the costume, and like something transmits through that gets lost in CGI. Like there's a humanity, a character that emerges. And although certainly there are people that have made, you know, that integration where there is, you can feel the actor even through the CGI.
For sure.
But that's certainly the downfall. And, you know, I don't think anybody wants to watch something that's so CGI that you lose, in a sense, a heart connection with the character.
Yeah, no, definitely. You can see there's been a few movies in recent years where they just took it a little too far, where everything's CGI, and it becomes hard to track with, like, why you should care about the movie. Even if the CGI acting is good, it's just, I don't know, there's something about it that kind of lends that direction.
Yeah.
But not to speak bad about it, by any means, there are some CGI performances that are amazing, but it just seems like those suits on screen. I know you were the only actor to actually be in the suit, correct? The voice for the turtle?
I was the only one that was in the suit, and it was my voice.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah. I mean, just that acting coming through the character at all times, it's pretty mind-blowing to look back on. Raphael being not only in the movie, but in my opinion, he's kind of the driving character of the movie, his story arc, mm-hmm. and what's going on with him, and you can really feel the emotion of the character, especially on the rooftop before the Foot Clan jumps him, and when he's interacting with Casey Jones, and when he interacts at the very beginning of the movie with Splinter. I don't know, to me it just felt like you lose the fact that that's a turtle. It just became a good performance, in my opinion.
Right,
and you got that across the board.
It's all about, you know, inhabiting it and being kind of having every cell in your body just committed to becoming this being. And sure. In a sense, you know, because the costume weighed 70 pounds, and from like morning to lunch break, we would all lose at least five or six pounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just so intense. But in a way, even though it was grueling at times, like having that physical intensity, just moving with an added 70 pounds on your body, like also helped just bring, for me, it helped bring out the angst and the journey of Raphael.
For sure.
So it kind of all served the purpose.
Oh, that's really, it's really cool to hear. Were you actually doing, I mean, I know you said you took some martial arts classes and stuff, but when it came down to the fighting, was that still you in the suit, or did you guys all have stunt doubles?
We trained for about 4 months prior to filming, and we all knew how to use our weapons. Mm-hmm. The really impressive fighting stuff is, you know, we had these amazing guys, you know, stunt doubles for the, you know. But we did a lot of, as much as we could ourselves.
Sure.
And then a lot of the stunt costumes were, you know, they hardly weighed anything, so they could do, you know, so much more.
That was kind of the background of my question, and I was like, man, these guys are doing like flips and kicks, 70 pounds. That's pretty crazy. So the stunt costumes were quite a bit lighter then.
Yeah, much lighter, because they didn't have, basically, you know, we went through about a 3-week rehearsal process where we rehearsed the movie like a play.
Yeah.
And I had one guy that just would watch my face without anything on it, would watch my face as we were rehearsing the movie. And then I would work with him to see how can we basically convert, you know, my face into, you know, the turtle's face. Like, how can we, because everything, he would operate the face.
Yeah.
But it was a really interesting process, you know, to be that aligned with somebody, you know, it was somebody from the creature shop, to be that aligned so that we could, you know, create that kind of being. And you know, in a lot of the fight scenes, like, you can't really tell because it's edited so well, but, you know, a lot of those faces don't move, or there'll be a close up and then it'll be one of us, the magic of it all.
It sounds kind of like a very early motion capture for the face.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was like a big drama issue for the movie when I was a little kid when this movie came out, but that Raphael said damn like several times in the movie. Was that like ever, did that ever come up in the scripting, or was that just a normal thing that the cast and crew thought was just completely normal at all? Because it had been a cartoon before this, and then getting to go see it with my parents.
I think it was, I might be wrong, but I know it was a comic book before the movie, but then, and the comic book is really...
So the comic is
at least the original.
The comic dark, is very dark, like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then somehow that became a very not dark TV cartoon?
Yeah, but I think the cartoon happened after the movie. I think so, but I might be wrong, but that was my... I think it was, you know, the comic, the movie, and then somewhere as the movies were being done, I think it was after the first movie, the cartoons emerged.
It definitely could
but
be.
I might
my,
be.
My little kid brain does
I might
not
be wrong.
Always have the best time pulling apart. I just remember my mom being like, this movie's for kids? And I was like, yeah, it is. But it was, I mean, I thought it was awesome back then, too.
Yeah.
It's just, there's a lot of like... It just doesn't come across like a kid's movie when you watch it. It comes across a lot like the old comic books, honestly, where it's like, it's really a drama. There's a lot of a lot of intense emotion going on in that movie. And like, it's not what I would expect by reading the title, you know what I'm saying? But I guess that was kind of the big deal with the comic books as well. So
yeah, for sure.
Did you get a chance to look at any of the old source material before shooting the movie?
Oh, yeah. The Eastman and Laird sent me a bunch of the comics, and yeah, so I just, you know, immersed myself as much as I could in that world.
That's definitely probably the best place to start out from. So where would you say that this movie landed in your career? It was like pretty early in your movie process, or I know you had some roles before it, but.
Yeah, I've done a few movies before that, but this is the first time I had a lead in a movie. Yeah, so this was definitely early on. I'd done a lot of theater, and I'd gone basically on that journey that I mentioned at the beginning of, you know, just experimenting how to create spontaneously and physically, and really all that training was perfect for Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Did your work on Ninja Turtles kind of help? Was it kind of a little bit of the structure for what you're doing with Committed Impulse now? It sounds like you'd have had to be very out of your own head to play Raphael, more just like 100% the character, like you've been saying. Or was Committed Impulse just something that came way later?
It was something that was starting around then. I mean, I'd gone on this 2-year journey of just training with as many different people as I could. And I was involved in a theater company in New York called Circle Rep. And they said, why don't I start directing and training actors in this, what I've been learning. And so I had started doing that kind of work, you know, very, never with an intention to teach. And in that time, you know, I would periodically show the work that we were doing, and people started getting very interested in it. And then NYU asked me to teach, and I was like, I'm not a teacher. And they were like, just come teach. And, you know, I fought it for a while, and then, you know, and then kind of gave into it, and, you know, have been teaching on and off since around the time of Ninja Turtles.
I mean, that sounds really cool. You get to play a lot of different roles in the industry that I'm sure you are a huge fan of. Getting that teaching position, the acting position, and it's probably cool to see a lot of upcoming talent as well, I would think. But
yeah.
Why don't we go ahead and talk a little bit about Joker, a movie that you're going to be involved in here coming up. It's releasing later this year, correct?
Yeah, I think it's the first week in October 2019.
Yeah, I think that's what I saw.
I mean, I there's not a lot that I can say about it because I've signed some major...
Sure.
But, you know, Joaquin Phoenix, who's amazing, you know, he plays the Joker, and it's a very... it's a DC movie, but it's a very not, there's no superheroes.
Yeah.
There's no special effects. It's very old school, and it has like the vibe of Taxi Driver to it and King of Comedy. And both those movies that De Niro was in are real influencers for this one. And also De Niro is in this movie. And it's one of the best scripts I've ever read. And it's so intense and so real, you know, about a guy that's it's the origin story. So it's just about, you know, this guy that life, how life affects him. He just evolves very organically and truthfully into this character.
It looks like a character study of like the Joker almost from the, from what I've seen.
It is. It is. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I have no doubts. I've been a huge fan of Joaquin Phoenix ever since Walk the Line, which I know was around before.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
But that was kind of the movie that got me enthralled with him and what he does. And then that character is so iconic, and even all the people who've played that character have become iconic in a way. Because of how many layers that character has. So to see where that developed and how that developed and the origin story of that character with an actor – and, you know, as far as I'm concerned, a very qualified actor to go through that whole roller coaster with everybody would be – it sounds very interesting to me.
Yeah, it's going to be – it's going to be something. It's really – it really is.
Well, that's cool. I understand you can't talk much about it. I got to save it for the spoilers and the whatnot season that come and then for the movie itself. But I saw that you were in another upcoming movie called Motherless Brooklyn.
Yeah, Motherless Brooklyn. Finished shooting that. That I think will also come out around the same time as Joker. I don't know for sure, but it'll probably be fall 2019. And that was a movie that Edward Norton wrote and directed and also stars in. It's based on a Jonathan Lethem novel of the same name, Motherless Brooklyn. And it's just, you know, I've worked with Bruce Willis and Alec Baldwin, Edward Norton.
Was Mark Maron in this movie, or is that a different movie?
Mark Maron is in it. I didn't work. We didn't have... Mark Maron is in Joker.
That's right, Joker.
He's
sorry.
Not in Motherless Brooklyn. Yeah, but it's just got a stellar cast, and it's just a very...
And both
set in the 19...
Both movies have a really good cast.
Yeah, amazing cast. And yeah, Motherless Brooklyn is set in the 1950s, and it's this amazing political thriller about, well, I'll just leave it at that, but it's going to be, it's like an Academy Award type movie. I've seen some of it already, and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, with a writer like that and a cast like that, and, you know, I don't know how many people are familiar with the source material, but Jonathan Lethem's book, and he's a great writer to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine that movie has quite a good showing at the award shows later in the year.
Yeah. Yeah. And Edward Norton is just, you know, he's a buddy of mine. We've done a couple movies together. We met doing this movie called Rounders years ago, and then we did a movie called Leaves of Grass and this one. And he's just an awesome guy, you know, so committed to the craft, great director, like fully in it to make everything the best that it possibly can.
He's definitely a transformative actor, like when I think about one. It's like whatever he's doing, he is that thing in that movie.
Absolutely.
Some actors get so big that it's hard to take that away from them. Like, it's no disrespect to Bruce Willis. He's amazing as well. But it's hard to, like, not see Bruce Willis when you see Bruce Willis. But when you see Edward Norton, he's just whatever character he is in that moment. From American History X through The Machinist, through all these other movies that he's been a part of, even Hulk, you know, going back to the comic book series.
Yeah.
He's just, I agree with you. He's one of my top actors as well. He's very amazing.
Yeah.
Must be very hard. I mean, I've always thought that must be a very hard thing about what you guys have to do to pull yourselves completely out of a character and then, you know, you become the character.
No,
I'm impressed with it personally, but
it's just, you know, it's like if you're made, you know, if you're made to do it, it's, you know, I think we all love the challenge of, you know, really challenging ourselves to either transform and, you know, be completely truthful or to not transform and be completely truthful. And, you know, I think it's what actors, you know, live for.
Sure. Well, again, I want to thank you, Josh, for spending some time with us this morning. I think it's
my pleasure.
Good length of an interview there. We really appreciate having you on. That's our pleasure having you. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners, or where can they find you on a daily basis?
Well, I'm on Instagram. That's where, in terms of social media, just at Josh Pice. That's where I'm, you know, if I'm on social media, that's kind of the platform that I'll frequent the most.
Okay.
Facebook, I'm kind of, I think people are getting over Facebook. It doesn't interest me as much anymore. But Instagram is still fun. So, come to at Josh Spice on Instagram. And there's also at Committed Impulse on Instagram as well.
Yeah, and I encourage everybody to check out that as well. It looked very interesting. So
yeah, committedimpulse.com. And like I said, there's a free lesson on there. And, you know, I teach several times a year.
Awesome.
That's what I'm up to.
All right. Thanks again, man. Thank you, listeners, for joining us again at Thinking Outside the Long Box. And we will be back later. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Baron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Baron Space production.